Hiya, Tim Burgess here. Before the podcast, I have a quick note. Due to rights reasons, the songs have been shortened for this podcast. Every song is taken from The Libertines, All Quiet on the Eastern Esplanade. All tracks are written by Cal Barrett, Pete Doherty, John Hassell and Gary Powell. It was released on the 5th of April 2024 on Casablanca and Republic. Enjoy.
Tim's listening party was a lockdown sensation.
Unfortunately, it was on Twitter, which you can't listen to.
But Absolute Radio has the solution.
Tim Burgess explores seminal albums alongside the artists who brought them to life.
Absolute Radio presents Tim's Listening Party with Tim Burgess.
Hiya, and welcome to this episode of Tim's Listening Party on Absolute Radio with me, Tim Burgess. This is a show where I have the pleasure of speaking to an artist all about one of their albums, and we all get to listen to it played out together. My listening parties over the past year have included everyone from New Order to Texas to the Bangles to Tears for Fears. To catch up on any of these past listening parties, make sure to search for Tim's Listening Party wherever you get your podcasts. And I'd love to hear from you, so feel free to tweet me throughout the show using the hashtag Tim's Listening Party. This episode, I'm joined by one of the most renowned songwriting duos in British music history, Pete Doherty and Carl Barrett of The Libertines. Notorious, raucous, shambolic and ramshackle, but brilliant, poetic, smart and witty. They are the indie heroes for a generation, defined by extreme ups and downs. Their music has survived through it all, and so have they. Their first two albums, their 2002 debut, Up the Bracket, and 2004's self-titled record, marked the pinnacle of the noughties indie renaissance in the United Kingdom. Amongst a busy field of indie bands in that era, many would go as far as calling them the most important one. Now, they've returned with their first album in 9 years and their fourth record overall, All Quiet on the Eastern Esplanade. I'm not really, you know, getting my DJ chops on or anything, but I think it would just be good to just talk about, you know, how you got here, really.
Right, yeah.
Not here.
Yeah.
But...
I had a weird dream about you last night, actually. So
really?
Before we went to bed, they gave us the rota for today.
Yeah.
It was like Alan Carr, so how you doing the Tim Burgess thing.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
You infiltrated. So in the dream...
Yeah.
Do you want to hear what happened?
I think we have to.
I was working for the Scottish Devolved Parliament as a translator.
Yeah.
And you were having a debate... I think it was Francois Hardy you were having a debate with about wind farms. I was supposed to be translating for a group of visiting school children.
Yeah.
And some load of Ukrainian soldiers and a load of Russian soldiers, all in balaclavas, and then you started having a song off. You started different songs to each other, and you did. You had a VHS, because when I was a teenager, I had a VHS promo video of Weirdo.
Yeah.
And you put that on.
Yeah.
And then people started complaining because I was only translating into some sort of gobbledygook instead of Macedonian. And then I was expected to do the moves as well. It's like a weird dream, man. And then you were going back and forth with songs. I can't remember the exact songs. And she did Tous les garçons et les filles.
Wow.
That was one
That's
of
quite a dream.
That's quite a dream, isn't it?
Some cheese before bed.
How did we get to this album? What happened before?
It seemed to go through a permanent state of reunions. People kept saying, oh, it's good you're back together. But we'd actually been back together for a while. But
yeah.
We were playing... same songs again and again. So 2015 we wrote quite a few new songs, however many tracks were on that 2015 album, probably two-thirds of them were brand new, but the set lists when we were playing live were all the same, you know, basically.
Right.
Not that I wasn't enjoying the songs, but
so this was like the Hyde Park gig and all that kind of stuff onwards, or after that
from then onwards up
yeah
to
yeah
2022 it was the same, pretty much the same set list.
Yeah.
Just bringing all the old classics, yeah, and the big guns back.
Point of history, you made friends in 97, and then we...
This is what we want.
Oh, right, sorry.
I know. No, it's all good.
So, yeah, no, 1997, we made friends. This young, bright-eyed, footloose and fancy-free young fellas about town. And we then formed a band, and then 5 years later, after many incarnations and whatnot, we got our first record deal, Big Time, with Rough Trade.
Rough Trade, yeah.
Then we did an album. From that moment on, it was quite frenetic, and we made a record called Up the Bracket, which we're very proud of to this day.
Very good.
And then we...
21 years ago, yeah.
And then we very quickly made a follow-up album,
yeah.
But we had some issues in our lives and what have you, that meant we fell apart, really, as friends and the band, and... whatnot, but then we carried on making that album, and then we disastrously fell apart, did solo things, and then reunited for the first time in 2010.
Yeah.
And then we did another album in 2014. And then here we are. We did another one. Sorry, that's quite boring.
No.
It's really like that. It's really dull. Yeah, there was a lot of really good stuff in the middle of that.
All sort of roads lead to this interview, I think.
Right. Exactly that.
Yeah, because we've known each other for a while. You know, we met, I think, a few times and then actually spoke in Coventry at Terry Hall's.
That's right, yeah.
Thing.
Coventry got City of Culture.
Yeah,
so that was a celebration.
He did a festival in the ruins of the old cathedral. So he curated the festival.
Yeah.
Chose
yeah.
all the bands and the DJs in. Yeah. And you spoke at that.
I played at that, yeah, yeah.
I enjoyed that. You know, had that madcap group. Enjoyed that. Some good bands on that day, see?
That's good. That was a good time.
How long have you been doing this then? How long have you been doing that?
It feels like ages, but it's not been that long. Maybe like a year or something.
Enjoy it.
Pretty good, yeah. I mean, this is like this is a highlight, you know.
It started off on Twitter.
So on Twitter, we did it, and you did it, and I think some of the most enjoyable ones, really. And you typed all yours out on a typewriter, and I think you had a big argument. I think, which I thought was kind of quite, you know, in your character, everyone was disagreeing about how things were written and.
Yeah,
and I like that, and it kind of reminded me a lot of our meetings along the way. You know,
you two had a band together, didn't
we?
You?
Had a band really? Together, yeah. Yeah, that probably, yeah. Absolutely, nobody knows about
the Chavs.
Well, thanks for bringing it up, but yeah, we did two shows, I think. Was it three?
I think we did two. Maybe I think we did two shows in an interview for Alan McGee's TV show or something. It went pretty wrong.
It was a pretty good manifesto.
But yeah. What was the manifesto again?
I think it was like five gigs before Carnegie Hall.
Right, that's it. Yeah, yeah.
And we only got to three.
Yes, we got two left. Big time, baby.
You got three. You did three, and then you played Carnegie Hall.
Well, we didn't get there. That was the downfall in the manifesto.
I mean, there's a pub in Felton called Carnegie Hall. I could have got
your
gig there.
Two more gigs, and we're going to be good for it. Yeah.
Enough about that band for now, and back to the Libertines. Let's kick off with the first track and the lead single from All Quiet on the Eastern Esplanade, Run, Run, Run. But I must suggest you better run, 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 boy, faster than the past, through the looking glass. If you want the night to last, you better run, 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 boy, faster than the past, through the looking glass. If you want the night to last. That was the Libertines with Run, Run, Run from All Quiet on the Eastern Esplanade. So, where did work for this album start?
So, we went to Jamaica
right.
a short period of time, 2 weeks. Where are we? 2023 then? Mm-hmm. September 23? Or whenever, because it was a funeral of Elizabeth II. So, whenever they buried Her Majesty Elizabeth II, we were in a glass studio on top of a hill.
In
the jungle with a hurricane going on and the funeral on the telly, trying to see if we still had the magic.
But I think, you know, with those ingredients, if we didn't have the magic then the magic wasn't there. But hurricane energy on top of a mountain in Jamaica with the Queen being buried and ton of jerk chicken, I won't lie.
Every 10 minutes you'd hear, and it'd be another bird had flown into the glass window, confused by the hurricane. They had all these, like, concussed birds around. They weren't dying, but they'd just be unconscious for a while, and then you'd see some movement, and they'd fly off. I saw it as a metaphor for something. Oh yeah, the band. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, is he down? Is he out? No. The wings twitching. Oh my God, he's up and singing. Yeah.
And then telling me, there you go, fly off, and then come back and do it again.
I was going to say, I noticed that chicken was mentioned in the first two songs, and I thought, but I wonder if they were the first two written.
Oh. First two.
Chicken's in Run, Run, Run.
Yeah. And Mustang as well.
I think you misheard that.
Did I?
I mean, it should have chicken in it.
Go on.
Well, just say it, Ad.
Right. Is that your notes? Chicken question mark. I can see your extensive research there.
I think,
chicken question.
Yeah, I mean, I have done a lot of research. But, I mean, I think the lyrics are a bit quiet in Mustang, I think. So chicken could be.
Right, okay,
no, I think I think there is chicken mentioned in there. But
chicken in it.
No.
What I was going to say was that we came back from Jamaica with some really dodgy cod reggae that no one wanted to use or even get, you know, listen to more than 30 seconds of, and some really strong rough demos, and one of which was Mustangs.
Right.
And that really is what
So no chicken is mentioned in Mustang.
No chicken Mustangs, but there's chicken in
run, run, run.
Chicken in Run, Run, Run. Yeah.
Which is actually a bit of a nod to Backdoor Man by The Doors. And he goes, I eat my chicken any man ever seen. Well, I'm a backdoor man.
So with
Willie
that...
Willie Dixon, not Willie Nelson. But The Doors covered it, that's what I first said.
Did they?
It's an old blues line. It's an old Stan blues line. I've used that line before. It didn't work.
There you go.
But
I did.
Yeah. You're a big Doors fan,
massive Doors fan.
Yeah. And Velvets.
And Velvets, yeah, usually.
It's good. Get it all in.
As are you.
As am I. So was Run, Run, Run one of the first ones you wrote then?
No, Run, Run, Run was really one of Carl's songs that he was keeping.
I think I started knowing that it was... I think because I was writing quite... I was trying to write slightly different things, a bit more experimental, a bit more sort of free-form and
When you hear Carl's original demo to it, it's almost like... Mike Flowers pop, but it's like a swing jazzy version
it's
of the one
you would.
I think it just went in one ear out the other. But then when you play it to me just acoustic straight, it's a lifelong project.
Yeah.
I said, where you been hiding this? Let's do this. But that was at the end of the album session, really, when we got to 8 or 9 songs and we were starting to wonder what we were going to do. So we both sort of emptied our pockets and put stuff on a table that we might have been saving for solo stuff. So out came the Baron's Claw and Run, Run, Run.
And we dragged one out of John's pockets as well.
John,
the melody.
Right before we hear more about track 2 on All Quiet on the Eastern Esplanade, let's hear it. It's called Mustangs.
And the advances of heathens. But every single night you ride Mustangs to a dream. To the big man in the low ride, the smoking roll is in the sunset. I'm holding from the road because those of the rider, he's like Pac-Man when he goes. And stars collide and empires fall and blind side.
So, track number 2 was Mustangs. And what did I write down? I like the mention of chicken. No.
No chicken.
No chicken. Okay, so where did that come? That was an
Mustangs,
early one then.
That's one of the songs that came through being in Margate, which is where we, I forget to mention, after it, what's actually taken a lot of the 9 years, I don't know how I forgot, actually agonising on a day-to-day basis, is the setting up of a hotel and recording studio headquarters.
See, that really intrigues me, that how you pulled that off. And... as a band, got to work in there yourselves, because I mean, we built a studio and we go to other people's studios.
Crew, wasn't it? I remember
we got one in Crewe and we never used it. You're right. but
you're so welcome to come down, man.
Yeah, I'd love to.
We'll give you a room now if you want to come down.
We've got a little venue as well and a recording studio.
That'd be amazing.
Do one of these from there. We've got a nice setup, haven't we?
Yeah.
What we're doing here, we should have done it.
That's good.
Well, we can do another one.
Yeah, we should.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
But the season, Margate, isn't it? And
yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
We're right on the Esplanade.
When I first heard the title of the song, I thought of Martin Duffy and his album Assorted Promenades. And he was always sort of trying to tell me, you know, is it promenades or promenades?
That's so funny. That really is quite a parallel to what discussions we've been having only today. I googled it earlier. So an esplanade is a wild seaside kind of walk.
Yeah.
Whereas a promenade is a built-up one.
Although the esplanade is pretty built up now.
Why are you saying esplanade now? What happened there?
I always say esplanade.
Earlier today you said esplanade quite a lot.
It depends what I'm rhyming it with. You see, on the album I used the word a few times and it depends on the rhyme. You
know? Okay.
Yeah.
Right. I think, yeah.
So shiver, I say esplanade because it's... shiver on the esplanade.
Right.
Fair enough. But in the Ed Belly song, I say esplanade.
That's good. I separate them as well. That's good.
Yeah.
So you built the studio...
Yeah, and then we opened a hotel. We thought that would help us to cover the costs, the running costs. It turned out actually that was actually slightly more expensive. but the studio is second to none. We love it, and it's like
world class.
We've
got a little venue there as well. We're going to do poetry nights, open mic nights. It's a small bar, small kitchen, so you can eat, drink, and be merry, really.
Wow.
And we've got our sister club for live shows if you want to make a bit of noise. And a bandstand opposite. It's £1,500 cap for a. There's plenty going on around there. And it was good to get consumed in the sort of environment and the landscape for the purposes of having our place, but also for the purposes of being inspired to write the songs. Like Mustangs, for example, that had about 9 different verses originally.
Right.
And each verse had a different story or characters, most of whom were from a sort of surrounding area,
yeah,
people we'd encountered or been inspired by at the time. So, yeah, I think it's been important these sort of last 9 years.
Well, you're living in Margate. Kids go to school in Margate now, do you know? So
that's
he's
right.
And the
backing vocals, like Tracy, is it?
Yeah,
is
that Tracy, that's
great. Did he bring all the singers down as well then to your studio, or did he?
No, the backing vocals, we did them in, we did 3 weeks in our studio, then we finished off in Normandy.
Oh, wow.
Just a bit of a change of scene and whatnot. And then the producer got a couple of backing singers that we knew off Tinder or something, wasn't it?
I don't know where he found them, yeah. I remember he was getting all dolled up. He was like, no, I'll pick them up. The guy running the studio was like, I can send a car. He was like, no, I'm going to go down and get him like that. And he came back, his face was like that. He was fuming because the photo they'd used on their blog was 40 years old. So he was great. You know what I mean? He was a good producer. He was on Tinder.
Yeah, we need to pick him up at a Porsche or something.
You'd come in to the studio, he'd be like, Pete, I need you to take a look at something and see what you think, thinking it'd be the reverb on the drums. And he'd be like, within 12 kilometres. I'm like, what?
Yeah.
What about the drums, man? The drums are fine. She must do loads of squats, no?
where did you find your producer?
Carl's. It's a good mate of Carl's family.
Yeah, he's a great producer. He's West London's workhorse when it comes to like new talent. And over the years, he's been quite prolific. And I met him doing a writing session for Black Honey. I met him way before that, actually. But we've done a few things together. And he just felt right for it.
Dimitri Tikhovoy.
Yeah. And there's a nice megaphone backing voices as well, is that?
Oh, yeah, there's one of those funny little mics where you push a button, one of those ones. A lot of sort of racehorse commentary background, you know, that works.
What's that
on? You know, like on Mustangs, especially. Glory to the Lord!
Yeah, it's like
see,
sort of.
Yeah, the shouty bits, yeah. If it was up to me, it'd be down to you, A to B, and back again, so easy.
But that's quite exciting to have all that in a record, isn't it?
Yeah, it was great. Yeah.
He loved it. He spent about 2 weeks worth of the recording time with Carl doing his shouty bits. Because honestly, he ended up again breaking it down syllable by syllable. We spent like 3 hours just going,
It's quite important on a record. It's
multi-tracking.
No, but then he has to do it live.
That's how we've got the energy on a record, you see.
Your little face when we're doing it live, though, when you see you getting halfway through and you can't remember anything of what you're supposed to be shouting.
It's
a little switcheroony.
It's quite a mouthful, man.
Back to All Quiet on the Eastern Esplanade. This is I Have a Friend on Absolute Radio. Like the bombs, they fall without warning. Follow the tracks in the mud down to where the sea is black with blood. And the tears, like the bombs, they fall without warning. I Have a Friend by the Libertines. Tell me about that last track.
It's a weird one, I Have a Friend. It's probably one of the only real, what you'd call, I don't know what you call it, but you call it punk. It's definitely upbeat. It's just like dirty guitar.
It's
like
garage kind of.
Yeah. It's one of those really on the album. So you've got to really be in the right frame of mind to be recording stuff like that. You know, when you're shouting heartfelt lyrics, it's hard to do them as overdubs.
Yeah.
So it was tricky to get right, wasn't it? And it ended up being two different songs sort of gaffer taped together. Really.
Did he work it out actually in the studio?
That was one of the songs that was started, worked out, and finished as a band in the room, really, wasn't it?
And then
it was a case of just not wanting to, one of the songs we really didn't want to start analysing it and tinkering with it, because then you're taking away from the raw energy. A lot of it was ad libs and.
Yeah.
Well, obviously, about the horror, the horrors of war sounds cheesy, I don't know why, but
no, it's about
the horrors of war and just, and it's so present in our world, you know, at the time and still. What's the lyrics? You don't know you're born.
No, you don't know you're born. Free speech, free born. Love, and next thing you know, you're being let out the door. Love our children and men. The time again. The devil. Is it all just a dream? because of the imperial threat. It's the problem of being locked into a news cycle sometimes, you know?
Yeah.
There was some days where we were literally, well, me especially, just like switching from CNN, Al Jazeera, and all these insane images coming through. And it can be a bit overwhelming. And it's, but when it actually hits you on a gut level, do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Or you know someone who's involved, and it's very difficult. It's a difficult thing to get right. It was going to be the Ballad of Bakhmut, wasn't it?
Yeah, and the meat grinder. We wanted to take it away from something that you can identify with. So that opens up those specific conversations.
You mean?
Yeah,
well, there's a line in the chorus about the sea being black with blood.
Yeah.
The Black Sea, isn't it?
Is there a line about tears like bombs?
Yeah, it's quite sad, really. But
yeah,
that middle bit with the tears like bombs, nicked them chords from a beautiful self song.
Yeah.
I have a friend who is never up by ten.
I don't think it's called that, though, the song, is it?
No, it's called something else.
No, never mind that.
So that's our little nod. That's our little nod to them, though.
It's a doffing of the cap. Nothing more.
We give him the title, yeah.
He used to get autographs from everybody that he played with, Paul Heaton.
Really?
Yeah. I thought it was quite cool.
Yeah, that's wicked.
I went through a phase of that as well. It's quite nice.
What do you mean, bands that he was playing the same lineup in?
He would, yeah, at festivals and stuff. But I took it onto a different level, I think. Just my friends, really. You know,
that'd be a job of work at Glastonbury.
Be tough at Glastonbury.
200 bands.
That was the third thing we did in the Chavs.
What was that?
We played at Glastonbury.
Oh, I see what you mean. Yeah. I forgot, in wigs and stuff.
In wigs. Yeah,
yeah, yeah. Yeah. Yeah, that's a good point. I forgot about that. The Chavs took
Glastonbury. Who did what in the Chavs then?
Martin Duffy played.
Yeah, I know. Martin Duffy, God rest his soul.
Yeah, God rest his soul.
And Andy Burrows for a bit as well.
Because he knew all the chords for all the songs.
No, but I mean, Jamie Cax. You two, who sang and who's... Like,
we both sang, didn't we?
We both sang, yeah.
To each other.
Cool.
Yeah, yeah.
Did you record anything?
I think Dean Fragile might have some.
Amelia Dean might have something. Okay. we might have to do a bit of tinkering.
Enough about the Chavs, let's play track 4 on the new album, Merry Old England. They've got to get to Merry Old England. Syrians, Iraqis and Ukrainians. Oh, how you find me Merry Old England? With the chocolates once white, they're graying in the Soviet light. Oh, my, he loves to stay in the light. That was the fourth song from the Libertines, All Quiet on the Eastern Esplanade, Merry Old England. I really love Merry Old England.
Thanks, man.
Yeah, me too.
I really love it. I mean, I was talking to a friend of mine last night about, you know, she said, what's the album like? I said, it's great, but, you know, Merry Old England, it's just gorgeous, you know?
Oh, nice.
And so can you tell me about that?
Yeah, just about race and Englishness, English identity. And England, really, just this strange island nation that somehow sort of prodded and forced and fought its way into the consciousness of people all around the world, and has always attracted people. We are really a mongrel island, wave after wave of immigration. And then this populist debate about immigrants, and in particular the boats.
Mm-hmm.
It always, this sort of thing at the back of the tour bus, we'll talk about, we're kind of obsessed with, and everyone has a different opinion, and there's a varied opinions, like, you know, in our crew, in our mob. But the one thing that we agreed on was that, you know, we are all, we've all made the same journey at some point. You know, it's in all of us. The way, you know, like, I'm part Ukrainian Jew, Irish, kind of like part of God knows what, African, Asian, European. He's got everything in him. And this guy was walking, he used to walk my dogs in Margate, and he stopped me, only when I was in the studio. I love walking on myself, obviously, but he answered an advert in the paper for security crowd control. They basically gave him a luminous jacket and a taser, and his job was to stop people escaping this place where they'd hold people who they'd found off the boats. And he was, the stories he used to tell me about, like, the people he met there, the people they're keeping in these camps all crammed in, they find off the dinghies, and, you know, they speak 3 or 4 languages, or they're trained doctors, they're artists, poets, everything. Just people who have sacrificed everything, literally, to come to England, to come here, and Margate's kind of part of the epicenter.
This is the controversy it causes. Like, you know, think if people have so many polarised opinions and it's a hotbed for debate and discussion. And I think if you like from Julius Caesar onwards, every invasion of England, bar the Scandinavian ones, you know, or every migrant to England has come through that area. And like the Short Cliffs, you know, they're eternal. They've been there for millennia, and you know, I don't know what their opinion would be on, on all the latest controversial topics and whatnot. But yeah, it's just kind of there's a kind of a futility and abuses and a bizarreness to claiming your heritage and nationality and why it's so important to people. And it doesn't really sort of give an opinion. It's more sort of point of contemplation.
Yeah, but also it's something I'd like to talk about and would like to write a political essay on, but I don't think I'm eloquent enough. So this song for me is a way of being able to contribute somehow to it in a way that I feel I can do, you know, rather, because I'm not a writer, I'm not a politician, but
it comes across with the orchestration and the backing vocals as well. It's just incredible,
yeah,
you know.
That piano intro is, I think, is my favourite bit on the album.
The way the keyboard and guitar are winding around each other and that, I think it's almost like the voices of the conversation and the, that's quite beautiful.
I love it. It's a doorsy feel to me, and Carl's guitar part as well with it.
Yeah, Robbie Krieger.
That descending guitar. I love it. It's a really tricky one. Really having trouble getting it right live though. You know, it's hard to do after you're like playing it. If you're playing a real cassette. Particularly because we don't really have guitar parts for it, because it's all built around the piano. You can't really pull it off with two electric guitars really loud. It's, I don't know how we're going to do that.
We'll get there. It's hard. I mean, it's hard to get anything new into the live set. Isn't it?
A piano and acoustic guitar.
Okay, let's move on to the next song. Here is Man with the Melody on Tim's Listening Party. The sunlight appears. No, you can't catch me. Fifth track on All Quiet on the Eastern Esplanade, The Libertines with Man with the Melody.
I love the instrumental. The Beatles are their most weird, I thought.
I like that.
Although I don't like, I mean, it's, it, I, but I don't like to compare people's songs, but.
No, that's great. Beatles,
but okay,
if you're good at it, use the Beatles.
Yeah, Doors, Beatles, Zelda. That's fine. Yeah, that's good.
Yeah, that guitar solo was a nightmare. It was an exercise in trying to be as within the boundaries of the key of the song, to be as weird and free as possible without reverting into like cheesy bluesy bends or pentatonic stuff. So it was really
it's hard to do.
It was really hard. I took a few takes for that. Yeah, then we got there.
And did you both play, or was that just you?
That was with me, but then on that bit. But then Dimitri, he followed up every weird note on a thing called that keyboard he had, like an octave.
Oh yeah, no, I don't know what it's called.
Celeste or something, I can't remember. Anyway, but he had to follow
Celeste up. Celeste sounds about right,
yeah. Yeah, it's good. It's going to be hard to do that live.
Well, that's all right, isn't it?
Yeah.
Practice.
We'll get there. That's the way at Carnegie Hall, isn't it?
Practice a bit. Yeah, it's hard though, isn't it? It's hard to practice.
Oh, yeah, it's really hard, actually. It sounds like the least interesting thing. It should be so wonderful, but it's just so hard.
You can't catch me, I have the melody.
Yeah. So Carl mentioned before we started the band in 97 and we had this basement, the original Albion Rooms is this basement. Our singer at the time, Scarborough Steve, we're looking for a bass. They said, listen, there's this lad, he lives on Patchell Road with his mum, he's got his own amps. And we were like, all right, what does he look like? He's cool, skinny kid, cheekbones and that. So we went round and lo and behold, the teenage John Hassell was there with amps of his own.
He was the most beautiful person we'd ever seen, with his like, dark, like, doughy brown eyes, this chiselled, like, it was like it had been designed by, like, a car company or something, jaw and cheekbones, and an insane ability to play that bass, like, just with the soul.
So we got him on bass, but it turned out quite quickly that he had he was an amazing guitarist as well. We never, like, we were really, really jealous and guarded of the frontmanship, so poor John, we wouldn't let him sing any of his songs. But one of them that he had was called Annabelle Lee, which he's taken the title from an Edgar Allan Poe story. Mm-hmm. And that's really the germs of this song, because it's sort of the same melody and the same chorus. But we
muscled in and had a little verse each.
Battered it, put it back together, and then we all wrote a verse each. And it is what it is, and it's a really weird one to write and sing for me, because it was so personal, some of these lyrics. And they're kind of all about, well, I like to think they're all about each other. I don't know what
yeah, this I think,
is about,
I think
but as you were singing it, I remember thinking, you can't say that to me. And there was a way of communicating certain things we wouldn't normally, because we'd just end up in a punch-up with each other.
Mm.
And I remember those were some of the more somber moments of the recording, where all the lights would be low. And be like, oh, Carl's going to do his take for the man with the melody. And you do that thing about crawling back at dawn, the black dogs howling. And then John's got that line about you, but you must be joking, you're stealing my lines. I don't want your crumbs and all this. Mm. It was almost too much to bear, and not really knowing whether it was going to work out. And it took a while for that song really to be a definite choice for the album.
Yeah, it's better to have that in song though than just to have it out pointlessly on some.
I'm really curious I do care what people think, but I'm not that about specific songs, but this one, I'm really curious to know what people think about. I don't think it's like anything we've done before, you know what I mean?
So you sang some of it and then Carl joins in, is that right?
John does first verse.
John does first verse.
Gary does first chorus.
Right.
You do second verse, I sing second chorus.
Yeah.
I do third verse, you sing last chorus, and then we all sing the ultimate chorus. Yeah.
Might have taken a little bit of auto-tune.
It's great.
You know, it's because I got the melody. For a long time, none of us had the melody. It sounded like a cat's chorus, but we got there.
It's good. I mean, it's good to have everyone singing, though.
Yeah.
No, it's
and
great.
Is that a first?
I think that's a first.
That is a first.
Yeah, to get everyone in there. I'm not trying to get Martin singing in our band. No,
it's been a while.
Yeah, I mean, it just sounded, to me, that sounded really powerful, and everyone sounded the same in a kind of, classic kind of way that, like when bands all seem to sound the same, you can't, like The Clash, I suppose you could never really tell sometimes, especially like when everyone's joining in, it's like, or Wu-Tang Clan for me, who's taking this first,
Pete's just got his first Wu-Tang record the other day.
Yeah?
Yeah, he was so shocked, I was playing it in the...
Which one was it?
The first one.
Yeah, it's a good one.
That's funny.
I couldn't believe he knew all the words.
I couldn't believe he had it. It was like part of my life. Pete could never understand.
I listened to this mad bass line, and then he starts singing along with the words. He goes, "Oh, it reminds me of being 13, sat in the back of the car." Who is this man?
Yeah.
You had the Wu-Tang jumper, didn't you?
Yeah. I used to sort of idle my time away, just trying to guess who was doing what.
Well, it happens with you lot. You're not sure if it's you or me, but
it sounds so similar.
I can definitely understand that. So, lads, I want to go back to the timeline of your great band. So, you had a lot of hits, some big hits, played a lot of gigs, and then you had a break, and then you did Anthems for Doomed Youth.
That's right, yeah. And that was over in Thailand.
Yeah.
That was where the sort of story took us.
It's a mad one, that. I don't know how was it recorded in Thailand?
Well, there was like praying mantises on the mixing desk. No, for real. It was nuts.
Yeah. Well, it was a snake pit. Before it was a studio, it was a snake pit. Remember, the only surviving member of the staff in the snake pit was the guy who was still doing the security on the desk. He did the light packet. He had a kind of Tourette's, or either that or the only words he knew in English were very rude ones. So he'd be walking past it and you just chat like that. But he'd take us out shows the snakes, didn't he?
Yeah. And he'd go, is there any like anti-venom? I'm going to bring my kids out. There's not snakes everywhere. In the rain, there's these pit vipers, they're like, fearless, and they're curled up in the rain, and they're not scared of people. If you tread on one, you get bit. And I said, what happens if you get bit? Is there an antidote? Do you go to hospital? You die. It was pretty resolute about that.
Yeah.
So you got through that?
Yes.
You got through that record?
We did, and then this is quite pot. This is whistle
it's good,
pot,
it's good
it?
History, right?
yeah, that was done out of the way, bang, whistle stop, lick of paint,
and then more gigs.
And that was part of a 2-album contract with EMI Universal,
right?
That we actually signed at a temple in Thailand, didn't we?
We did,
wow,
yeah. I've been living, I've been in rehab in Thailand for quite a long time. and you came out to visit, and I think the day you came out to visit, we got the guitars out.
Yeah.
And we sort of knocked the song together and said, yeah, no, we can still do this, this is easy.
Yeah.
And so he said, oh, well, I'll come over here with the boys and we'll record here. So we just moved into a residential studio over there and put anthems together. Yeah, so that's where we are. How well, where are we?
So when you met in Thailand, I mean, for, you know, for anthems, did you bring stuff with you? Did you bring songs, or did you just start from scratch again? Is that the key? Because I sometimes wonder.
Similar to the last record, in that there are a lot of brand new songs, but the word, like "You're My Waterloo," for example. Mm-hmm. I mean, that precedes the breakup. That song, in fact, it precedes the first album. Mm. But we never really thought of it as a commercial song or a band song. So that ended up on there. But mainly it was just middle eights and lyrics here and there that had gotten lost and never been used. It was sort of put out on the table.
Yeah, I did a couple of visits over there and we just... you were already working on something. It was a Diana Ross song, weren't you? Baby, baby.
Oh, yeah. And then that turned into the Milkman Sauce.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, yeah. We changed a few lyrics and whatnot. And yeah, then we took over a couple of those sessions, and then there was like the engineer out there, Shane.
Yeah.
Big Shane. And then he was getting together. Then we did one.
There's some camping. We went to the jungle on an island. Portable recording device.
With like a field recording kit.
Good.
I just remember they had mosquitoes, man. And then I spent the whole night closing up my mosquito net, going, right, I'm good now, and then hearing this in my ear, I have to open up and do it again. But it was a good album.
Yeah, no, I stand by it. I've read in a few interviews that you've done on your own that I was curious about, that where you've said you don't see it as the third Libertines album.
Well, I didn't then. I come round to thinking, yeah.
But now, that's like nearly 10 years old, is it? Something like that.
Yeah. I think it was just waiting for the next step. I think this album concludes that one. Yeah, in a funny way.
But then, if you were thinking about doing a band and 10 years in between, it's kind of a weird one, isn't it?
Well, yeah, I think it's 9 years. Since
9 years in between.
Yeah.
So, I suppose, I mean, that doesn't bring us right up today, because what happened in the 9 years in between? Or have we already got that?
Well, we were in a position where we were able to do festivals.
All the things
we were getting less and less each year to do the festivals, you know, and the tours we were doing, we got a good loyal fan base, but as I say, we'd have a good knees up, but we're playing the same songs, and most of them really from the first two albums.
Yeah.
And then it just reaches a point where, you know, I love you and I love this band, but if we're not doing new songs, because when we're always writing, I write to a lot of different people, and, you know, I've done solo projects and had different bands, Peter Margers, Carl's always seems to have two or three different things going on. But the Libertines, I like to think, is this sacred thing for both of us, and we tend to bring the quality to the table for that. Do you know what I mean? Like, if they've got any songs I've been saving for solo stuff, I'll generally like somehow make sure Carl's heard it, and then we weren't in a situation where we were putting any lib stuff together, not even demos. Maybe we'd get 5 minutes on a tour bus at 4 a.m. between, you know, German shows or whatever, but there was never a serious idea that we were actually gonna get around to it. And then it turns out that we're contractually obliged to do it.
Wow.
So it's like either...
Well, no, there's a contract with the universe as well.
You see the point I'm making, though.
That's good.
It all came on top,
like, we're going to actually have to write a new record or pull the band, because...
It's amazing we can milk it for that long to a PD. it did turn in from celebrating it to milking it a bit, and I think, you know... I think with that comes the danger of the sort of heritage, helter skelter, and we've been teetering, and we knew we had more in us, and we really were. And there was stuff like there were the things that we had to say and we had to write, and so... Yeah, we have to get in there really before the old sand run out.
Let's get in there and see whether or not we could actually sit down and write songs with each other anymore. You know, that was a big, not a worry of mine, but it was definitely a concern that, because you can't force those things, you know, you can't plan for them. You know, you can't have a timetable for creativity or magic. It just either it happens or it doesn't. And if it doesn't, I'm sad, but we just have to have moved on.
Well, I think with this record, you've proved you can still sit down and write excellent music together, as demonstrated by this next track, number 6.
Absolute Radio. I'm Tim Burgess and I'm having a listening party with Pete Doherty and Cal Barrett. Cal, tell me about that last one.
That's actually a song about, it was kind of written in the sort of Lou Reed tradition, the Duck and Sally Inside.
I got a Velvet's vibe from that.
Oh, great.
Yeah, and kind of like, you know, the name check and check.
The name check,
yeah,
thing, specifically.
When he plays it acoustic, it's really Velvet's, yeah.
But you know, it's about the names in it are actually the two people who run our hotel.
Yeah.
Or Imogen, who runs it, and her partner, who's actually my art teacher now. He's a great artist, and he knocks out a mean burger as well. But so it's about those. To really, and it's about that moment of risking everything and change your life to something totally different, and you know, that I found it inspiring and brave, and the romance involved, their love and their trust for each other to hold them through that on that journey, and that's what inspired most of that song.
So if you worry about doing something and don't do it, then nothing happens, but then if you go for it, you're sort of like nervous about it it's going to change something.
Yeah, but if you love someone, you take the plunge and you can look into each other's eyes and go, I've got you and you've got me.
Yeah.
You know, I think that's a beautiful thing. And that's
So it's Imogen and Nikki.
Yeah.
One of the lines in the song is about how they wrote their initials on a wall with a big love heart around it. Did she tell you about
that? Yeah,
this?
Yeah.
So
she showed me.
We didn't know anything about the story, but they've told us since they heard the song. Yeah. How did you know? That was our secret thing about this wall down at the seafront, but they'd actually done that. They'd actually... And the first movie, they carved their initials into this wall and then love it exactly like it is in the song.
Yeah.
So it's a really strange...
crossovers.
Serendipitous scene there, yeah.
You've always built your own world, though, haven't you? Really, you know, I mean, I know it's like... I mean, for me, Warhol, Velvets and stuff like that, and then... I mean, now with the hotel and the recording studio and stuff like that, it's your own world.
Yeah,
but you've always done that anyway.
Yeah, it's the Arcadian dream.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Self-mythologising, celebrating, propagandising the dreams, really, which you don't realise other people are going to believe until you connect with them and find them and meet them, and then...
It's hard to create the world you want to live in. It takes a lot of effort, bravery and belief, and I think that's something we've always tried to do. So I'm bigging myself up there, don't I?
It's good.
It's been hard.
It's good, good, good. Very Warhol.
Oh, good.
Let's move on with the seventh song from All Quiet on the Eastern Esplanade. It's called Night of the Hunter.
I'm just calling to tell you, baby, that they're taking me away for a while. Well, don't blame me, it's the world that made me, and they're taking me away for a while. Taking me away.
Night of the Hunter by the Libertines on Tim's Listening Party. Pete, talk me through that last track.
So, I want to talk about knife crime. Like, we all know that that's a scourge on the nation, on humanity, but the idea that some horrific crimes are created out of an idea that... So someone's mate will get stabbed and then they'll have to go and stab them because they think they're defending their mate, and it just becomes a tit-for-tat thing. But then that moment when you realise that, you know, so he sat there basically, sat there with the bloody knife in his hand, love and hate on his knuckles, and he just doesn't want to run. He sat there at the wheel of his car, he's got the police car behind him, and he's not a country and western fan, you know what I mean? He never listens to grime. But in these last moments, he doesn't know where his phone is, or it's probably battered. These last moments where he gets nicked for this act of, you know, what he saw as justified revenge, but actually it's just stabbing some kid.
Yeah.
He fumbles with the car radio to try and find a decent grime song to be nicked to, you know, so he can be all like hard and cold and mean. And he accidentally tunes into a country and western station where the chorus is, I was calling to tell you, baby, they're taking me away for a while. So, we had these verses about this kid doing this thing.
Yeah.
And then Carl was like, no, what we need here is a big rousing country and western chorus. It's a strange dichotomy of...
He's got love on one hand, hate on the other, and ACAB on the other. The guy's got three hands, I just realised. Unless he's got ACAB on his foot.
That's a really good point, that. I never thought about that.
Okay.
Well, that verse can be for someone else.
All right, fine.
Okay, that's interesting, that. Back to the drawing board. Is it too late to change to go back in the studio?
You could go back.
All right, have you only just thought of that?
Yeah.
Make a note, where's my pencil? Oh my lord.
Is it fiction or fantasy or a bit of both?
A bit of both, really, I think, yeah.
Yeah, it's good when that happens.
Just absorbing what's around, really, without getting to
some, you know, some flashbacks to some horrible, nasty moments. that I've been close to, but never involved country and western before. Yeah. You know, I mean, that's really
you got to sort of narrow your eyes and sort of soften the focus of reality a bit. Yeah, sometimes.
Yeah. I put this kind of Morricone meets Sergio Leone.
Ooh, love that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, that's a win-win. I'm loving these. These are good.
Can we have that on the billboard? Right.
Yeah.
That's nice, that. Yeah, we like that. Sergio Leone meets Morricone. Gary Powell did the strings on that, didn't he?
Yeah.
Did he?
Yeah.
Well, he didn't play it, but
although it's similar to the Swan Lake vibe.
Mm-hmm.
And in the video, I don't know if you've seen the video tonight, The Hunter.
I have seen the video tonight,
Did you
yeah.
watch it till the end?
No. Because,
all right, well, that's the that's what Carl calls a reveal.
No, the reveal was too late. Anyway,
but anyway, eventually the reveal, which you didn't see, is that as he's getting nicked, he bursts into a big ballet move.
Oh, wow.
It's a little hoodlum, so yeah.
Oh, that's it's kind of Sergio Leone a bit again.
Yeah.
Maybe,
yeah,
there you go.
He's busting pirouettes out.
Yeah. No. That's good vibes.
Yeah, very good.
You're listening to Tim's Listening Party, and this is the next song on the new album from the Libertines. It's called Baron's Claw.
You walked alongside as the car went by, carrying the Baron's Claw. Stories never grow old when there's still things to be told. Things to be told about the Baron's Claw.
That was Baron's Claw, taken from the album, the new Libertines album, that is, All Quiet on the Eastern Esplanade. I really like that one too.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, very much so. And I thought, is it about Jekyll and Hyde? And then I started to look on the internet. And I saw this guy called Baron von Raschke. And he was ordinarily James Raschke. I just wondered whether it was about him. He was a wrestler. And he had this sign on his posters
really?
Doing that. And and I thought, is that the Baron's Claw?
Well, no, but where's my pencil? I'll research that.
The poster's good.
That's great.
If it comes out as a single, use the poster.
Oh, we've got to see the poster.
Yeah. I was thinking more of a sort of Victorian greatcoat. With a claw poking out there, and all the kids in the street, you know, it's a little terraced street, but at the end is this big old gothic house surrounded by big iron railings, and no one's really sure who he is, where his money came from, you know, sort of genteel poverty. And no one really knows how he got the claw, but the story is he got his hand blown off during the First War.
Wow.
At the Somme, and so he's got this bejeweled hand, and he's seen as the, all the kids are scared of him, make up rhymes about him, but then one day, when the grocer's shop was burning down, he slashes through the grocer's door and saves the family from the fire's roar. And as his skin melts on the street, Baron stayed on his feet, holding aloft his claw. And then when the big black car goes by at the funeral, all the kids are
falling
afterwards. They go, cool.
I like that.
I really love the middle bit. I wanted to get like a New Orleans type funeral march.
Oh, the brass and upright bass is gorgeous, yeah.
Yeah. That was a classic
truck
brass.
So I wanted something even darker at that bit, so I'm going to re-record it
for
my solo album.
I wrote this down, right, and I don't know whether it means anything, it probably doesn't, but it was, in the past, maybe you've been like wearing your demons on your sleeves, and this is more leaving fingerprints on the door handles. And I wrote it, but I don't know what it means, so if any of you know what it means...
So it's more subtle and detached from the obvious.
But it's dark. The album's dark, isn't it?
Yeah. It's telling you like the Baron's Claw. That's got a real sort of menacing.
Yeah, and the night, you know, the Night of the Hunter.
Oh, yeah.
And also Mustangs as well, I think. You know, it's kind of dark stuff, but it's not dark like before.
Yeah, I mean, like day drinking, like singing it about, yeah, the stories of the people in that song. Yeah, there's so much darkness.
I guess sometimes I think, like, you know, tied in and tied out, and then if both your tides in, you're thinking on the same, you're on the same page.
The record.
Yeah.
We definitely are, yeah. But also because so much of it is done, we didn't slog it out, but there's a lot of time spent over a table like this with a typewriter.
Yeah.
Discussing it rather than, it just being banged out and yeah, not just happening so quickly and easily like it used to.
And what I mean by tied in, tied out is like, you know, someone's here and someone's there, and it's like, how do you get it to be this thing? You know, I mean, I'm in a band and I find it impossible to, you know, to sort of like to work with people at the wrong time.
Yeah, I think when you get it, you get it. And when and for this album, we very much were on the same page and still are at the minute, yeah. I think. And that's so important. I mean, we had to grab that with both hands because it's essential. Without that, I don't think we'd have anything like the record we've got.
Yeah, yeah.
But yeah, yeah. I mean, it can be hard. I mean, we spent years of not being on the same page at times as well. And that does, it makes for a different kind of song, but it doesn't make for the sort of truth in the song that I think that we've got with this album.
Yeah.
Mm. One of the things that Carl insisted on for this, the writing and the recording, was that there was going to be no drugs, not even alcohol,
yeah,
in the studio. So yeah, we had this period, 4 or 5 weeks, where it was just the music. There was no, yeah, you know, we were sort of sleeping and eating together. No, we were sleeping and eating together as a band, and there was none of the stuff that had always, for me, had always just been a part of everything, which was having, yeah, a drink and,
yeah, yeah,
and everything else. But there was none of that. So it was an unusual experience.
Just a little bit of distractions and confusion.
Yeah.
And then that sort of got extended into tours, and just there'd be no alcohol backstage. And so the band becomes the reason why we're there, rather than something to just get out of the way before we like crack on with everything else.
I can relate to that, sort of, you know, doing the gig and getting it over with just so you can get backstage, yeah, and have the best time.
Yeah.
And when I gave up, you know, taking drugs, I felt that it was like a real sort of honesty that I'd been sort of avoiding, really, for me anyway. But
I don't know, when did you stop then?
I can't remember now. 2008.
Bloody hell! Wow, it's amazing. Well done.
Thank you.
But I think it's true. If like if you can write with the world as being as real as it could possibly be, then that's the place to write from for me. I mean, I don't think I write well with drink or drugs.
No, you're not very good on.
It's a fun experiment.
What?
Well, you're not. I care about you. I can see you when you reach that point where it's just, oh no, where do we go from here?
You're great on drinking drugs.
But I can sort of control it and I can get through to the other side. You end up always wanting to do like kung fu and everyone.
No, I get through to the other side though. Anyway, how do you get to this?
Yeah. I don't know.
Yeah, I was still thinking about the fingers on the door handle. It's such a lovely image. I'm just trying to. It sort of suggests a bit of guilt and a bit of a pretending you weren't there.
No.
No?
I don't know. I mean, I didn't really sort of think of it like that. It's like leaving traces, like, and just more mystery, I think.
I like that. Not Columbo like that.
Yeah. So you made a mysterious record.
Oh, that's good.
It is. Not enough of it. Anyway, let's play another song. This is track number 9 on the new album. It's Shiver. As the tattered standard hits the ground, another coronation day. That last song was Shiver. It's a single, right?
Try to hold back from doing a shudder there.
A shiver.
Whoa.
Shiver.
Whoa.
A tattered standard hits the ground, another coronation day.
Yeah, I think that's about the perpetual cycle of the people of monarchy and what people are used to. I mean, that part of the song in particular. But I mean, that song is about a great many things. It's about war and lovers and our relationship with each other. And it started 27 years ago when we first put pen to paper.
Yeah.
On the first night we ever wrote together.
It was the first time we ever sat down to try to write songs. We had this one line and we were just going round and round. A minor, D minor, G and A. It was the last dream of every dying soldier. I've seen you there, flowers in your bit, never had a title and it never got any further. And so it just drifted off.
Yeah. It never left our subconsciousness.
Yeah. Well, apparently not, because when we were struggling for lyrics for trying to record this album, it suddenly appeared again like a long lost child.
That's great.
I mean, who we thought, you know, was never going to amount to anything. It turns out that he'd opened a chain of ice cream shops.
He's nailing it.
And he's now like running a corporation, but a good-hearted corporation.
And yeah, then more frozen yogurt.
And he came back, and in the meantime, we'd written a song called Shiver, That was one of the Jamaican demos.
Yes, it was.
That ended up as a middle eight, that part. Mm. And then there was the other one, that a song called Your Demo Sucks and Blows.
Yeah. That never quite made
it. There's a weird amalgamation of the old, the new, and the middly bit.
Yeah.
Really tricky to do live because...
A lot of backing vocals and stuff.
Also, the version of the album's actually quite delicate.
Yeah.
And it's hard to whack out them chords.
Yeah.
After you've been doing, like, Time for Heroes, a horror show, and then you have to play a loud guitar on a song you don't really have a part for.
And the lyrics
mean so much to me that I hate having to shout them and knowing that no one can hear them.
If you know how to use pedals, guitar pedals, I reckon there's a way around that.
not something we've
really got into.
Well, actually, maybe I can be persuaded then, because...
No, because the trouble with guitar pedals, the reason I never really used them is because once you get louder and better sound, you don't want to go back, and then you just need to build your sound.
You have to let yourself go back.
That's where I struggle, but we'll get there.
Rein it in.
You rein it in. You've got your pedals either.
Yeah, I mean,
I'm saying rein it in and use the pedal.
Oh, yeah, good idea. Make a note of that.
I mean, it is kind of like, first two tracks are like really, you know, in your face, and then, you know, the sort of delicate and more mysterious ones, sort of like, you know, I don't know, they really shine without the bluster. Is that, I don't know, it's a bad word, but
bluster is a great word.
Yeah, bluster then. So to do that live will be, it'll be fascinating, right?
It was a really difficult album to sequence in terms of, like, I did the thing with, I think a few of us had a go, but where you cut right all the names on a bit.
Who's the best sequencer?
I never get involved in
that. I like to think.
Understand it, really.
Yeah. Start off with a bang, and then
getting a dynamic.
It's good.
It used to be so important. And in our day, you've listened from start to finish. But these days, just whoever's got the best clip in it, or whatever. So I'm told. But yeah. Anyway, it's still important to us.
Yeah, it's important to me. I mean, the last track, "Songs I Never Played on the Radio," is you know, it couldn't go anywhere else, could it?
Yeah.
Well, it could. That, I mean, yeah, it sounds great at the end.
That had to be last. Yeah. Yeah.
So here's a question for you guys. Me and you have tumbled down many a street and hill.
We have indeed.
Together, most notably, the cobbles of Montmartre.
Yeah.
What's the most notable place of beauty that you've had a tumble with, Carl?
I think the streets of Montmartre as well.
Yeah?
Really,
wow.
They're just blessed stones, aren't they? So you can feel the weight of history and poetry trickling down them like wine. Like so many memories. We wrote a few songs there and we'd sort of romanticised it before we were there.
Yeah.
And it didn't really... let us down, I don't think.
No.
But also Margate as well, I think. Down the seafront in Margate.
Oh, nice.
When the sun comes up, there's a strange light down there, sort of low sky. And you see this perspective. I mean, that's why so many artists, I think, were drawn there, for the light and the air.
Yeah,
there is some kind of magic there. But I love those really quiet mornings when you just go down the beach, you know, when either the tide's really far out or really close.
Yeah.
Just jump in the water or just sit on the wall.
Never seen a bad sunset in Margate ever, and it's just something restorative about it, which is why it's famously a place of convalescence. Over the years, you had like Turner famously, T.S. Eliot, Karl Marx and Dickens pop by, didn't they? And then, you know, it was 1769, it became a sea bathing thing, that became a thing, and Margate was at the sort of vanguard of that kind of movement, inventing the sea bathing machine.
Yeah.
Yeah, the restorative waters of Margate.
Yeah, the Royal Seabathing Hospital.
Yeah.
1769, it's still there, still standing.
One thing I forgot about in those cobblestones, I think to myself, isn't it amazing you have those glasses that bend? Do you remember you got those glasses?
Were they like aviators?
No, they were aviators, but they were like drinking glasses. You could screw them up in a ball, and then however you wound up, or however many cobbles you tumbled down,
they'd
always be able to ping back into shape.
I was a good tumbler.
You're a fine tumbler. One of the best.
What's all this tumbling? Are you two literally rolling down the street?
Very high up street in Montmartre.
Yeah.
And the night with a very suspicious sausage, I remember.
I remember that too.
Oh, dear.
Yeah. Time for the penultimate song on All Quiet on the Eastern Esplanade. This is Beyond. We'll meet you there. Stand up or shut up. Rise up or give up. Get up, stand up. Coming out tonight. Ultimate track on All Quiet on the Eastern Esplanade. It's The Libertines with B. Young. Carl, what's it about?
Yeah, I mean, if you look at that from a great height, it appears to be about all the sort of ills of global warming and people trashing the planet and what have you. And then I guess the middle eight really is actually, you still need to take time to be young and fall in love, chorus, and be in love. And
chorus says that.
Oh yeah, chorus, yeah. So
what?
You say this then.
No, I'm just saying it's not the middle.
No, I'm not criticizing you. I was struggling to do it justice there, I thought, and then you nailed it. You just swept in there. Just bossed it, Jiggler.
Yeah, no, carry on.
No, I mean.
No, you're right. It's that doom cycle of, well, just telling the truth, really. Looking out the window and seeing what's happening. You know, very close, like post apocalyptic times, you know, in the way it's going, everything from the water, you know, to technology. It's quite depressing, but at the same time you're saying just go out, be young, fall in love, and have a good knees up.
Yeah,
so just trying to cover
you can't
you care, this song's for you. If you don't, you're gonna love this song.
No, but you can't be blamed. You can't be born into a panic that often is could seemingly be out of your control to do anything about.
And
everyone has the right to be young and fall in love at some point.
It's a beautiful thing. Scar bit in the, oh, about 1:30.
One remnant.
There's no wandering away from total and utter annihilation.
From the Jamaica,
yeah.
We had to get it in then. If it's one of the only ones.
Yeah,
that's one of my favourite bits. There's no one wandering away. There's no one wandering away. When you're 1 degree away from annihilation.
I put a great ooze, so.
Nice.
Great ooze.
That's a good 2-word review, that.
Great ooze, not sure about the
R's. songs they never play on the radio. I mean, great ooze in that as well, I think.
Yeah, the old
Patty and Selma on that. Don't spare the ooze.
That's why you put them two songs together, so it's like some ooze and then lots of ooze.
Okay, ready for the...
Yeah, ready for the
ooh, maelstrom that's about to...
It's a great song. It really is great.
I can't listen to it without bursting into tears, and normally when I do that... And Carl sees, you know, he's like, oh, f***ing sake, they're right. But when we listened to it together in a car the other day, I could see he was getting a little emotional as well.
Yeah,
so
that's good.
Like, my work here is done.
Yeah,
I get emotional with that song.
It's good to get emotional when you listen to your own songs.
Yeah.
It's like, I mean, it doesn't happen often. Really.
Yeah.
So, what else? What else about it?
That's it. About that?
That's it. And that's it?
It's all in the song, Tim.
Yeah,
I think.
That's good to know.
I'd love people to connect with this song,
yeah.
Yeah, that's one that's had a bit of a life of being, like, scooped up and out. And
it was always this really skiffly song that was always ding 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 ding, and I thought that's how it was going to be.
Yeah.
And it was the producer, Dimitri, he said, well, why don't you try it like this? And before you even finished saying his idea, I said, no, whatever you're going to say, no, it's got to stay as it is, as he envisioned it. And he said, well, no, just if you... And I said, absolutely not, I'm standing my ground. And then eventually he changed the whole shape of it, changed the pace, the tempo.
Yeah.
And now it's got a more ballady Beatles feel to it, and it actually works, and it's a better song
I think, like, I think it's quite brave to go into that descending thing, and so it's a real vehicle for something powerful. And if what you've got isn't powerful enough, then it's just throwaway. But I think what we were saying in the song is really powerful, and I think that conveys it a lot better than the skiffle does.
Yeah.
I think that's what Dimitri taps into.
Wow. Well, thanks for coming in.
Welcome, man. Thank you.
That's
really great.
Thanks and for having us, man.
Pleasure.
Well, chav secret gig at Justine's.
Yeah.
On the cards. And then after that, Carnegie Hall, people still out.
Let's conclude this listening party with the final track on All Quiet on the Eastern Esplanade, songs they never play on the radio.
Rests on his desk, you know. Since 45s are digitized, his heart's bereft and his left is deaf. So for free and save your soul. What was the song they played? What about the pact we made?
That was the Libertines with Songs They Never Play on the Radio. What a pleasure it was to be joined on this episode of My Listening Party by Pete Doherty and Carl Barrett to tell me
all about the Libertines' new album, All Quiet on the Eastern Esplanade. As always, I like to finish each listening party with a handful of artists I've been listening to this past week. I've been listening to The Smiths, Louder Than Bombs. Also, I've been listening to Jack Name, and the album's called Magic Touch. Jack's from Los Angeles. I actually know him. Really love his music. This is called Do You Know I Don't Know? Question mark. I've been listening to Broadcast quite a lot this week. This song's called I Found the F. It's from Tender Buttons. I think most people who love music will dip in and stay in to the music of Broadcast, such an important band. So I recommend them anytime, any day, any year. And next up, I thought I'd add Serge Ginsberg. It translates to I came to tell you I'm going. But in French, it's Je suis venu te dire que je m'en vais. Also, I've been listening to Water From Your Eyes, and the song's called When You're Around, from the album Structure, that came out in 2021. I really like this song because her voice reminds me of Judy Sill, which excites me a lot. I had the chance to see the new Judy Sill documentary that's coming out, actually, roundabout, I think, today. So that's well worth watching too. She's such a genius, so I recommend that. Feel free to let me know what you've been listening to, along with your thoughts on this episode, by tweeting me using the hashtag TimsListeningParty. Every song on this episode of my listening party was taken from Libertines' All Quiet on the Eastern Esplanade. The album was released on Casablanca and Republic. I'm Tim Burgess, and thank you for listening. I'll see you next time for another listening party.
Absolute Radio, telling the story behind another iconic album with Tim Burgess.
Get involved using the hashtag Tim's Twitter Listening Party.